So you may or may not recall that we were just coming into the finish line here. We left off at 50, but I'll read you from 49. Again, he's unpacking the yamas and the niyamas in these final. Pardon me, and he's unpacking the fundamentals of practice in this book. And these last handful of sutras, we're getting very close to pratyahara. Well, we are. That's where we are. So we're moving from pranayama into pratyahara. So here he's still talking about pranayama. This is 49. With effort relaxing, the flow of inhalation and exhalation can be brought to a standstill. This is called breath regulation. With effort relaxing, the flow of inhalation and exhalation can be brought to a standstill. This is called breath regulation. And again, you want to really think about the concept of with effort relaxing. And you want to think about that in your own daily life, how true it is that we have to make an effort to relax. It should be the other way around. We should make an effort to action. But we have to make the effort to relaxation. And we can see that even for the ancient people developing these insights, somehow even they knew that the greater effort is into the relaxation, into opening into the lower depths of being. With effort relaxing, the flow of inhalation and exhalation can be brought to a standstill. This is called breath regulation. And it's so true, you know, we work with the Hamsa Mantra sometimes in this class, and it's a steadying practice. It's an internal practice. It's a practice. It requires tremendous effort. And what are we doing but sitting in the presence of our own breath? And the sutra is a sutra version of the Hamsa practice. With effort relaxing, the flow of inhalation and exhalation can be brought to a standstill. This is called breath regulation. And it's very true, we've all had the experience, when we simply pause for a moment of mindfulness, everything stills. We think that it requires so much. It doesn't. Because the self is always calling us home. It's always calling us home. It just wants us to like shut up for a second and sit down and listen. And then it's right there. Hey, where were you? Yeah. As the movement patterns of each breath, inhalation, exhalation, lull, are observed as to duration, number, and area of focus, breath becomes spacious and subtle. As the movement patterns of each breath, inhalation, exhalation, lull, are observed as to duration, number, and area of focus, breath becomes spacious and subtle. And again, this is a very elegantly articulated teaching on mindfulness. And the more interested we become with every aspect of sensation in anything here as applied to the breath, which remember it's more than the bridge. I mean, the breath is the infrastructure of our being. And as the breath becomes spacious and subtle, our entire being becomes spacious and subtle. It's such a great word, spacious. The Buddhists have kind of appropriated it for themselves, but we can use it very much in yoga. And that's what we're always doing, is creating more and more spaciousness and subtlety in our breath, in our mind, in our movement, in our action, in our non-action. The more spacious and subtle, the more sublime. I remember back in another lifetime when I spent much more time in ashrams than I can at this time in my life, and I therefore spent many, many, many more hours meditating and doing practice than I can now. I would sometimes have this experience where I would suddenly realize I wasn't breathing, or at least I thought I wasn't breathing. But it was because after so many hours of meditation, the breath was becoming so subtle that I couldn't even find it. I remember a couple of times just being shaken out of this deep place, thinking I was dead. But of course I wasn't. It was just that the breath had become so subtle, I couldn't even find it. And I remember asking one of the swamis in the ashram, what is happening to me? And he said, you know, your mind hasn't become subtle enough to discern the subtlety that your breath is becoming. And that's so true, because the body is actually much smarter than the mind. If we would just listen to the body, it's kind of ahead of the system. And when we let our mind run away with us, we know disaster always follows. I had a hilarious experience this morning. I had what one might consider to be a rather stressful morning, because I had many more appointments than I usually do, requiring various preparation before I left the house, and then going here and going there, and blah, 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 blah. It was very different than my usual routine. I was up really early, and my mind is just racing, trying to plot the best logistics of the day. And it became obsessed with, how am I going to fit breakfast in? And if you know me, you know, like, I'm not that much of an eating person. I mean, I enjoy eating, but it's not an obsession at all. But my mind was, and honestly, I often go till 2 or 3 without even eating. But my mind just got caught up, and it was 6:30 in the morning, and it was all caught up with, when am I going to squeeze breakfast in? And I have to get breakfast in. It was just like obsessed. So my mind was so obsessed, and the whole time I was in the shower, came out of the shower, and I, you know, in the morning I wash my face, and then I have this like, what's it called? What's that stuff you spray on?
Toner
that I spray on when I'm done with my, you know the routine, cleanser, toner, moisturizer. So, and the deodorant that I use is also a spray. And I literally, my mind was so caught up thinking about breakfast, I took this deodorant and I sprayed it. You want to be woken up. It was like, oh my God, what am I doing? So, and after that I stopped worrying about breakfast.
Did you ever eat breakfast?
I did. There was time, because that's the thing, there's always time. There was more than enough time for my stupid breakfast. It was so fine. But there I was, you know, it was just like this moment of, what am I doing? My eyes were burning, I was like, getting water. It's like, wake up. Wake up. So, this is an extreme example of mindlessness. When one would be much happier practicing mindfulness. As realization dawns, the distinction between breathing in and out falls away. And that's a great moment. Because when the distinction between breathing in and breathing out falls away, we're simply in that spaciousness of eternity. Right? That's the space between the breaths. And the truth is, we can live there if we get out of our head and stop spraying the deodorant in our eyes. Yeah? But that's what we do, because we're always spraying stuff in our eyes so we don't see clearly, right? We spray everything in our eyes, right? Bring it on. What can I delude myself with today? Right? What trick of mind can I get caught up in today so I will not see clearly? You know, Patanjali is so much about seeing, right? Yoga is the stilling of the thought waves of the mind. Then the seer rests in her own true nature. The seer, right? It's all about the witness and that notion of coalescence, when that which is being witnessed and the witness, there's no more separation. Yeah? Then the veil lifts from the mind's luminosity. Then the veil lifts from the mind's luminosity, and the mind is now fit for concentration. Then the veil lifts from the mind's luminosity. And that happens actually, yoga chitta vritti nirodaha, when the chitta vritti, when the thought waves of the mind, nirodaha, completely settle down. That veil is lifted, and the luminosity of the seer and the clarity of the mind, they're reflecting each other. It's that coalescence we were talking about a few weeks ago. It's pure scintillating luminosity and spaciousness. And the mind is now fit for concentration. Not even meditation, concentration. Right? Concentration comes before meditation in the Eightfold Path of the Patanjali system. When consciousness interiorizes by uncoupling from external objects, when consciousness interiorizes by uncoupling from external objects, in other words, when we draw our awareness in, detaching it from all the things we tend to attach it to. Right? This morning, mine happened to be all attached to when I was going to fit breakfast in. And it was so caught up in that, I was lost in this obsession with what I was, you know, when I was going to sit down. You know, what I had for breakfast, I could have taken in the car, just like some berries and some nuts and a little yogurt. I could have skipped the yogurt. I just had my blueberries and my cashew nuts, and that would have been just fine. Right? But my mind was obsessed. When consciousness, but when I sprayed the deodorant in my eyes, consciousness interiorized and completely uncoupled from the obsession of when am I going to squeeze in breakfast today. The senses do likewise. This is called withdrawal of the senses. The Sanskrit word is pratyahara. When consciousness interiorizes by uncoupling from external objects, and obviously that can be people, things, places, the to-do list, everything. You know, consciousness is forever pulling us out of ourselves. So we want to uncouple, we want to detach from the pull of the external world. And the senses are the driving force of externalizing, right? Because the eyes are always seeing, the ears are hearing, right? Smelling. The senses are so just like, wow, this world is so wonderful. Let me have it, let me eat it up. And if we could just eat it up and go back to stillness, that would be great. But of course, as we eat up the world, we get attached to what was pleasurable, right? And we become revolted at what was not so pleasurable. And we're caught in what is called the play of opposites. Right? When consciousness interiorizes by uncoupling from external objects, the senses do likewise. This is called withdrawal of the senses, pratyahara. Then the senses reside utterly in the service of realization. It's a very important sutra. Then the senses reside utterly in the service of realization. We were talking about this when we were driving over tonight. Before this shift in consciousness, before the shift when the senses begin to serve our realization rather than pull us away from the possibility of realization. Realization only happens when we detach from everything out here that's forever yanking us around. And we draw that energy inside and begin to really nourish that spaciousness that's here, but it's all crowded with all of our stuff, right? And the more we allow spaciousness to happen inside, the bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger we become, right? And that's a luminous bigness. And that luminosity has a profound effect on the entire mind-body system. Now, I actually come from a slightly different paradigm than Patanjali does, so I don't want to confuse you. But if we stick with the metaphor of luminosity at the core of our being, and luminosity as what we are, and as we allow that luminosity to shine brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter, it is like a, well, it's sometimes described as the light of 10,000 suns. It's sometimes described as a blazing fire. But I always think of it as a light that is both burning up everything that stands in its way and also illuminating all the dark places, opening everything up, so that spaciousness is being created so the luminosity can take over more and more and more of our being. And every nook and cranny that's just sort of been twisted and contracted and hiding and a little pocket here of shame and a little one here of unworthiness and then this one over here of rage, and it's all repressed and we're always running away from it because somewhere along we got the idea that there's something wrong with these experiences. But they're just experiences, you know? It's just life. Life happens and we respond. Right? And Patanjali is always teaching us, have the experience and breathe back into yourself. And as we do that, spaciousness becomes more spacious. Spaciousness becomes more illuminated by the light of what we call in yoga our own true nature, right? The self, Satchit Ananda. Because the Sat of Satchit Ananda, truth, is light. Light is what allows us to see, right? When there's no light in the darkness, we don't see. And so, driving over in the car tonight, we were talking about how before this insight breaks open, when we have a so-called negative experience, we're caught up in the story of that negative experience. Like for instance, me with my deodorant spraying in my eyes this morning. If I was in a different time in my life, it would have been horrible. Like, oh my God, I sprayed this in my eyes, I better go to the emergency room, oh my God, oh my God. You know, it becomes a whole drama. I can't believe I did that. I'm supposed to practice mindfulness. How could I do that? How could I be so in my head? What's wrong with me? I've been practicing yoga for so many years. I'm never going to get it. I'm a loser. Whatever. Something like that. Maybe that's a little exaggerated, but you know. You get the routine. So, and instead of sort of joyously waking up, I would have been joyously beating up myself the whole day. You idiot. And you're going to go teach meditation tonight? Who do you think you are? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but instead, it was just like, wow, look at how asleep I was. Wow, that's amazing. Wow. Whoa. And it becomes a teaching moment, right? It's very different. It's very different. So the experience became in service of my so-called realization, right? You know, another way that I've talked about this for many years, I don't use these metaphors so much anymore, but as many of you know, I used to use the metaphors a lot of the sacred masculine and the sacred feminine. And the wounding masculine and the wounded feminine. And in that paradigm, well, let's leave that paradigm, but let's just talk about the realm of being and the realm of doing. And because we live in such a doing-based culture, our doing tends to run the whole show. And our being ends up having to serve doing. Right. If, in other words, we have to work at relaxing. We have to make, I mean, I have clients who literally have to, well, this is probably true of all of us, kind of have to schedule in. Yeah, people schedule in a massage or you schedule in a yoga class. It's just, we have to schedule in time for being. There's something really wrong with that picture. Because being should be running the show. Right? And doing should be serving being. But we have it all upside down. This is the same thing that Patanjali is talking about. When doing begins to serve being, then being offers insight, wisdom, clarity, and then doing serves that. Right? This is the same thing. When we allow outer experience to be a teacher and an insight facilitator rather than an oppressive burden, we become much more spacious inside. So it's also heady, and I was thinking I must bring some Mary Oliver in, because nobody in my not so humble opinion does it better than she does. And I thought her book, Why I Wake Early, would probably have the best poems to relate to this. And I've read some of these before in this class, and I just thought this was so wonderful, because again, remember, we're in Patanjali, we're thinking a lot about light and luminosity. And this poem, Why I Wake Early, this is the title poem of the book. Hello, sun in my face. Now she's talking about getting up early in the morning and walking. But sun in my face is also a metaphor for exactly what Patanjali is talking about. Because he's saying, allow the mind to still and become so clear, like a clear lake, you know, or like the Caribbean in some perfect, perfect place. And then the seer, the witness, what in this system is called Purusha, is just this shining luminosity. And because the mind is so still, it's a perfect reflector of the inner light. And that's, we want the mind-body system to be so still, so clear, crystal clear, that the luminosity of, again, what is called Purusha in this system just illuminates the whole thing. It's like sparkling water. Just think of a lake, you know, think of a body of water that you've been in when it was just, everything was clear and the sun was shining and it was just sparkling. And Patanjali is talking about this as our true internal state. And here she's doing it in her own way. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning. And what is the morning? It's when we wake up, right? Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was. Dear star that just happens to be where you are in the universe to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start the day in happiness, in kindness. And what is, we start the day in happiness and kindness when we have stilled into that place where the breath has stilled and the mind has stilled and we're in that subtle spaciousness. That's pure loving kindness, right? Metta, what the Buddhists call metta. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. See, that's what happened to me this morning. that illumination shot up, and whatever misery and crotchetiness that might have been induced was obliterated. Best preacher that ever was, and it doesn't even talk. Dear star that just happens to be where you are in the universe to keep us from ever darkness. And it's so true, it's always here to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning. It's like, right, good awakening. Good morning, wake up. Watch now how I start the day in happiness, in kindness. And this one is a little bit more of a downer, but I think it's so interesting because she's talking about attachment. And when we become attached to objects in the outer world, the senses, again, what Patanjali is talking about, she's talking about a moment that she had when instead of that, how does he put it? When consciousness interiorizes by uncoupling from external objects. Right? And in this poem, she's talking about consciousness exteriorizing and coupling with an external object. The arrowhead, which I found beside the river, was glittering and pointed. I picked it up and said, now it's mine. I thought of showing it to friends. I thought of putting it, such an imposing trinket, in a little box on my desk. Halfway home, past the cut fields, the old ghost stood under the hickories. I would rather drink the wind, he said. I would rather eat mud and die than steal as you will steal, than lie as you still lie. Yeah? It's potent. Want to hear it again? Yeah? The arrowhead which I found beside the river was glittering and pointed. I picked it up and said, now it's mine. I thought of showing it to friends. I thought of putting it, such an imposing trinket, in a little box on my desk. And you know, we've all been here. We've all, like, the delight of a new object that we can possess, or a new person, or a new idea, or a new belief system, or whatever it is, that we're just like appropriating. It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Halfway home, past the cut fields, the old ghost stood under the hickories. We know who that is, right? I would call it Kali Ma. Somebody else would simply call it truth. I would rather drink the wind, he said. I would rather eat mud and die than steal as you will steal, than lie as you still lie. And it's a harsh teaching, but it's so true. Because when we are caught up in me and mine, we're in a story. And that's a lie. It might be a pretty lie. It might be a white lie. It might not even have any color. It might be a colorless lie. It might be a rather, in the grand scheme of things, seemingly harmless lie. Except it's harming us because it's creating separation. And it's creating the illusion that there's anything we can hold on to. Yeah? Right? Which doesn't mean don't pick up the arrowhead, but just know that you're borrowing it. Right? And you'll enjoy it for as long as it's your time to hang out with it. And then when it's time to let it go, we let it go. Right?